The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jory Slodke for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Discover. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the March-April 2025 issue. We begin with our feature story, The Internet of Animals Comes of Age. As the Earth becomes increasingly burdened by climate change, researchers have relied on tagging and tracking animals to understand how environments around the world are impacted. Meg Lamont and her team make their way through the swampy edges of a salt marsh that nestles in St. Joseph's Bay on Florida's panhandle. The summer sun beats down from a pale blue sky, and the shallow water is so warm it's almost hot. The air is heavy with the ripe smell of seawater. Prickly black needlerush and cordgrass scrape against their shins as they tromp through the muck. Nevertheless, the team is chatty and upbeat, full of enthusiasm for the work ahead. They're going to tag terrapins. Lamont, a research biologist at the U.S. Geological Survey Wetland and Aquatic Research Center, is an expert on the habitat and movement patterns of coastal and marine vertebrates in the Gulf of Mexico. The current project she is leading involves finding diamondback terrapins, the only turtle species in North America that lives exclusively in river estuaries. The team will capture dozens of turtles, record biological data such as the size and sex of individuals, then glue small transmitters to their backs. Once released back into the wild, the tagged turtles will be monitored via the transmitters and orbiting satellites. Getting data for imperiled species like terrapins can be challenging, says Lamont. They live at the boundary between pure marine and pure terrestrial environments, which is highly susceptible to environmental changes like sea level rise. It's a complex environment, so they're a good indicator species for what's happening around here. I love diamondback terrapins, she adds. They're small, beautiful turtles, but they do bite. The process of attaching electronic sensors to animals and then monitoring data that the sensors provide, such as an animal's whereabouts, is interchangeably called biotelemetry, animal telemetry, and biologging. Writing in a 1965 issue of Bioscience magazine, researcher L.E. Slater defined the fledgling field of biotelemetry as the instrumental technique for gaining and transmitting information from a living organism and its environment to a remote observer. Although the technology of biotelemetry has advanced exponentially since then, the description still holds true. The information that Lamont and her team gathers will add to an ever-increasing stream of animal-provided data that is filling the gaps in what researchers and climate scientists understand about Earth ecology and how to mitigate the effects of climate change. Data about the movements of diamondback terrapins, for example, is essential for establishing conservation strategies designed to protect their fragile habitats. Animal telemetry is so critical to our understanding of how animals behave and react to their habitats, says Lamont. The data benefits environmental managers in so many ways. Lamont joins a chorus of biologists and researchers extolling the virtues of modern biotelemetry. Advances in computer science, microprocessing, and battery technology are opening new doors on how animals can inform us about planet ecology. It's the golden age of animal tracking science, says Roland Kays, director of the Biodiversity and Earth Observation Lab at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. These kinds of data are super important for seeing where animals live and what are the conditions that they can live in, what temperatures they can survive at, what type of habitat, etc., because we're seeing that the planet is changing very quickly. Today's biotelemetry includes a mind-boggling array of ingenious devices and methodologies, from bees outfitted with minuscule radio transmitters to animal tracking satellites that follow the movements of crocodiles in Costa Rica, to fluorescent nanoparticles used to monitor the behavior of aquatic insect larvae. Animals are describing the world they're moving through, along with weather data, what types of vegetation, and how the land is being used, says Martin Wichelski, director of the Max Planck Institute of Animal Behavior at Radolfzell, Germany. The diversity of the data we're getting from these remote sensing devices is nothing short of amazing. The origins of animal telemetry can be traced back hundreds of years to European nobles who marked their trained raptors with silver bands stamped with a monarch's name. Occasionally, a cherished bird would take off and be discovered some distance away. A falcon belonging to Henry IV of France, for example, went rogue during a hunt and was found a day later in Malta, a distance of over 1,300 miles. These early peregrinations made interesting stories, but it wasn't until the late 19th century that the scientific community began to experiment with tagging fish and banding birds as a way to track movements and estimate the populations of various species. In the late 1880s, Thomas Fulton, a member of the Scottish Fishery Board, attached small metal tags to various fish species in an attempt to gather information on population growth and feeding habits. His tag offered rewards to fishermen who caught tagged fish and returned them with notes on the time and place of capture. Because an aluminum band was relatively easy to attach to a bird's leg, bird banding became a popular research activity pursued by both avian enthusiasts and biologists in the early 1900s. Professional and amateur birders flocked to banding organizations and clubs, many supported by natural history museums, zoos, and universities. For the first half of the 20th century, tagging and banding proceeded with enthusiasm, but without much technological innovation. It still required the laborious process of capturing animals, tagging them, then releasing them back into the wild. Data could only be obtained if animals could be recaptured or if citizens reported any found markers. The war years, however, ushered in the development of a new technology that would begin to change the game of wildlife monitoring, radar. Radar had revealed not only the whereabouts of ships and planes, but also the movements of migratory flocks of birds, even during the night. Taken along with manual tagging and weather science, post-war wildlife researchers were beginning to assemble a multidimensional view of planet ecology. The modern age of biotelemetry got a jump start in the late 1950s with the development of electronic tags. This first generation of radio transmitters included tiny batteries and antennas fixed to collars and fitted on animals big enough to carry the weight. Foxes, rabbits, deer, and badgers were prime candidates. The movements of individual animals could now be mapped, although a limited range of 100 yards or so often meant intrepid researchers had to traipse through underbrush with handheld antennas to pinpoint their targets. In the 1960s and 70s, scientists began to explore the idea that biotelemetry data could be retrieved by orbiting satellites, then retransmitted to receiving stations around the globe. That meant animal locations and movements could be tracked over long distances and periods of time. By the mid-70s, the French Space Agency, or CNES, was collaborating with NASA and the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, to create ARGOS, a polar-orbiting satellite system designed to monitor animal movements along with meteorological and oceanographic data. For researchers in the latter part of the 20th century, analyzing weather data would lead to a deeper understanding of the planet's changing climate. Meteorological information provided by high-flying satellites and ground-based weather stations began to paint a picture of a planet that was inexorably heating up. That technology has limitations. From their high-altitude positions, satellites observe whole swaths of land, providing broad spatial data that lacks fine detail. Weather stations provide nuanced information about local meteorological conditions, but they're static, fixed in place, and only able to furnish data about a limited geographical area. For researchers hungry for more data, there were still huge gaps in what they could observe. But climate scientists realized they had another powerful analytical tool at hand, the biotelemetry data being relayed by satellites, used to track animal migrations and estimate population vitality, was also giving detailed information about conditions in areas that orbiting satellites and fixed weather stations couldn't cover. Fitted with transmitters and released into their natural habitats, tagged animals were providing granular climate data that began to fill the gaps. In the Antarctic Ocean, for example, southern elephant seals, tagged with transmitters that record water temperature and salinity, roam deep under the sea ice, gathering data from a virtually unexplored environment. Researchers use the elephant seal data to track the rate at which sea ice is melting, a vital measurement of climate change. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Currently, 9 Argos satellites monitor about 13,000 animal transmitters, or platforms, providing data for more than 2,000 individual research projects. Animals can be our best observers for our climate change because they are very biologically fine-tuned mobile weather stations, says Diego Ellis Soto, a climate and biotelemetry researcher at the University of California, Berkeley. Ellis Soto notes that gaps in weather data from sprawling oceans and far-flung areas of the globe hinder effective climate research. In order to get a better understanding of, say, how warm it's going to get by 2050, we need to have a better understanding across the board and across all regions in the world where this is happening. Animals are giving us this critical information. Advancements in tagging technology have allowed researchers to gather information on an ever-increasing variety of species and habitats. Minnesota-based Advanced Telemetry Systems, or ATS, is one of about a dozen companies worldwide that make tags designed for animals, mammals, fish, birds, reptiles, and insects. At ATS, researchers can find tracking collars for monkeys with sensitive skin, backpacks for eagles, and transmitters a mere 3.38 millimeters. That's only about 0.13 inch in diameter that can be injected into juvenile salmon using a hypodermic needle. ATS offers more than 4,000 tracking products and produces about 50,000 transmitters annually. The cost of a single device ranges from $200 for a simple radio transmitter to several thousand dollars for a sophisticated, weatherproof GPS designed to last months in harsh conditions. For researchers setting up a tracking project, choosing a method usually involves a trade-off between size, cost, the number of transmitters required, and the transmitting power of the device. Biologists typically try to use transmitters that are less than 5% of the body weight of the host animal to ensure its freedom of movement and survivability. Guidelines from various watchdog groups, such as the National Park Service's Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee, make sure that the researchers maintain high standards when capturing and tagging animals. The process of attaching tags to animals is as unique as the animal itself. Catching turtles and gluing transmitters to their hard shells is relatively straightforward. Tagging a great white shark in the open ocean, however, requires a well-funded expedition and a seaworthy research vessel. A typical method involves locating a shark, capturing it with a baited hook, then wrestling a thrashing animal that may weigh upwards of 2,000 pounds onto a specially designed submersible platform. With the platform raised out of the water, researchers scurry to clamp a tracking device to the shark's dorsal fin, while assistants remove the hook and pump water through its gills to keep the animal breathing. With the device attached, the shark is released back into the sea. Tagging bumblebees may be less dramatic, but it's no less complex. Bees are captured and evaluated for potential. Big bees are easiest to work with and better able to fly with transmitters attached. They're immobilized by gently flattening them under a thin netting. Then their backs are carefully shaved to remove any furry body hairs that might keep the adhesive from sticking. After tiny radio transmitters are glued to their backs, they're released. Today's technology offers a smorgasbord of sensor and transmitter capabilities. In addition to positional data, birds can be outfitted with accelerometers, magnetometers, gyroscopes, barometers, and airspeed indicators. Marine sensors detect salinity concentrations, temperature, current direction, pressure, and light levels. Sensors can record the heart rate, respiration rate, even the stomach pH of individual animals. Solar-powered batteries keep instruments running indefinitely. Satellite technology is keeping pace. The Argo system has begun launching nanosatellites, small shoebox-sized satellites that use advanced microprocessing to send and receive data. Five nanosatellites were launched in 2024, with a goal of 25 satellites to be in orbit in 2025. These additional satellites open Argos to the way we are studying species, says Thomas Gray, a manager for Woods Hole Incorporated, a U.S.-based company that helps facilitate Argos projects. With our nine satellites, we still had information gaps of 3 to 6 hours between satellite passes. With the new satellites, we'll shrink that information gap to 10 or 15 minutes. Today, we track between 6,000 and 8,000 animals at any given time. But with the new system, we'll have the capacity to support 2 million active transmitters at any time, says Gray. It's quite exciting from a climate change perspective, and it's going to be a significant leap in our understanding of the environment as a whole. Expanding technology has brought biotelemetry and climate science into the realm of big data, where vast streams of information are linked and made available via readily accessible databases. The evolution has acquired its own tech chic moniter, the Internet of Animals, or IOA. The fastest growing IOA databases come from citizen scientists. Apps such as eBird and iNaturalist let anyone with a smartphone take a photo or record a vocalization of an animal, have the app identify the species, log the location, and download the result to databases that are available to professional researchers and other citizen scientists. More than 100 million bird sightings are contributed annually to eBird, and iNaturalist has nearly 200 million observations covering almost 500,000 different species. Publicly accessible data sharing platforms such as wildlifeinsights.org and movebank.org act as repositories of professional research, harnessing artificial intelligence algorithms to manage animal tracking data from projects all around the world. The vast scope of citizen science, combined with meteorological data and biotelemetry research, is beginning to create a real-time portrait of ever-changing planet ecology. But Martin Wichelski believes that animals can tell us even more. In the volcanically charged mountains of central Italy, Wichelski works with reptile experts and veterinarians capturing four-line snakes, a large, non-venomous species native to the rugged region. Using precise surgical techniques, the team inserts tiny sensors into the snake's abdomens and closes the incisions with sutures that will eventually dissolve. The sensors are designed to record and transmit information about movements, body temperatures, and respiration rates. The hope is that once a baseline of the snake's physiology and behavior is established, anomalies will be early warning signals of imminent earthquakes. As an animal, what you do in life is basically predict the future, because your survival depends on it, says Wichelski. Animals are constantly interacting with the environment, and if you have interacting senses, then you have novel properties that we often call a sixth sense. So animals are made to predict the future, and that ability is what we'd like to capitalize on. Ellis Soto agrees that animals are vital harbingers of planet ecology. We have really great technological advances that allow us to track almost all animals on Earth. And not just does that help us understand where species are thriving and where they're struggling, but also what is the environment they're encountering and how is that affecting them and ultimately us. This calls to a greater appreciation on studying animals and also that a healthy planet means a healthy life for us humans. The psychological toll of method acting. Whether it's on stage or screen, acting demands a lot from performers. Neuroscience and psychology reveal what happens in the brain when an actor fully immerses themselves in a role. The art of theater is probably one of the oldest forms of entertainment out there. Even now, audiences still gather in open-air amphitheaters, black box theaters, and multiplex cinemas to sit and watch all kinds of stories unfold before their eyes. And those experiences would not be possible without the performers who take on various roles to tell the tales. Acting is far more than just pretending to be someone else. And with certain techniques, like method acting, it's a complex process that requires an individual to fully embody another person. This includes their personality, emotions, motivations, and mannerisms. Given acting's demands, let's take a look at the neural mechanisms of getting into character. The intricate cognitive pathways and emotional processes involved in acting are little understood by science. Only a few studies have looked into the neuroscience of taking on a role. But some recent research is starting to change that. In 2019, a study published in the journal Royal Society Open Science examined the brain regions that are activated when method actors adopt a fictional first-person perspective during dramatic role-playing. The authors asked the participants, who were in an MRI scanner, to respond to a series of hypothetical questions as both themselves and their assigned characters. They found that the actor's brain activity in the areas involved in self-processing, the dorsomedial and ventromedial prefrontal cortices, was reduced when responding in character, rather than responding as themselves. The authors interpret these brain changes as a suppression of self. This suggests that acting, to an extent, is a suppression of self-processing. Theatrical art forms are unique in that performers have to portray themselves on stage as people who they themselves are not, says Stephen Brown, a cognitive scientist at McMaster University in Canada, who was involved in the 2019 study. Children across cultures engage in pretend play, and so play acting seems to be an important developmental step in socialization. A more recent study also found that theater actors might be suppressing their sense of self to a degree when acting. The authors of a small 2022 study in the Journal of Cognitive Neuroscience used wearable brain imaging technologies to record actors' brain activity when performing a role. The prefrontal cortex usually gets activated when an individual's name is called out. But when the actors heard their own names during a performance, they didn't respond as strongly as they normally would. Embodying a character and invoking realistic emotions to tell their story, whether it's on a theater stage or a film set, can blur the lines sometimes. Characters can take over the actor's self and have them doing or saying things they normally wouldn't. For instance, somebody performing as an angry person may find themselves being short-tempered around everyone. Meanwhile, a 2019 literature review found that blurring the boundaries with the character may result in a change of personality or even dissociation. It has been reported in the media that acting techniques, such as method acting, can have severe effects on an actor's mental health, says Dwanika Greaves, a cognitive neuroscientist at University College London, who was involved in the 2022 study. When an actor goes too deep into a role, especially for a long period, they might find it challenging to drop the character. After shooting Black Panther, Michael B. Jordan reportedly had a difficult time getting out of the mindset of his film's villain, Eric Killmonger. Lady Gaga also experienced some psychological difficulty towards the end of filming House of Gucci, when she was too absorbed by her character, Patrizia Reggiani. And, famously, Austin Butler confessed to losing touch with his own personality after playing the titular King of Rock and Roll in Baz Luhrmann's Elvis. At present, a large gap in research remains when it comes to the psychological impacts of acting. Extensive studies on the neuroscience of acting are also needed to further explore the subject and what happens when actors slip in and out of roles. There may be degrees to how much being in character can affect oneself, something Greaves is continuing to navigate. I would hypothesize that an actor's training technique will influence the distance actors create between themselves and their character, she adds. This distance will then determine whether there are long or short-term effects on the sense of self. Touching the Sun. In April 2009, Discover shined the light on an up-and-coming NASA project poised to undertake the daring mission of studying the sun. The mission envisioned new breakthroughs in solar research by flying through the sun's blazing outer atmosphere, the corona. Researchers were determined to accomplish this feat by constructing a spacecraft, then known as the Solar Probe Plus, suited to withstand intense solar heat and radiation. The probe would monitor various details like magnetic fields and solar wind emanating from the corona. Almost a decade after the project was featured in Discover, it would eventually launch in 2018 under a new name, the Parker Solar Probe, named for solar physicist Eugene Parker, who first proposed the existence of solar wind in the 1950s. Since its launch, the probe has been orbiting closer to the sun every year. In 2021, it made history as NASA announced that it had flown through the corona for the first time, facing temperatures of over 2 million degrees Fahrenheit as it sampled particles and magnetic fields. Thus far, the mission has demystified many of the sun's properties that have long puzzled astrophysicists. Among its various discoveries, the probe observed an abundance of switchbacks, S-shaped reversals in the sun's magnetic field that are being closely followed for their role in accelerating solar wind. Researchers are still chiseling away at the sun's mysteries, one of the burning questions being why the corona is hotter than the photosphere, the visible surface of the sun. The probe's measurements, researchers anticipate, could bring them one step closer to deciphering the coronal heating problem. The historic mission will conclude in 2025, having orbited the sun 24 times during its 7 years in space. Once the probe's fuel runs out, it will be flipped around, unable to make adjustments to protect itself with its carbon heat shield. Most of its components will be completely melted by the sun. However, a few parts, including the heat shield, will survive and be left orbiting the sun for over a billion years. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jory Slotke, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Discover is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. That number again is area code 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.